Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. So, Doug, Happy New Year.
Yes, happy 2024.
Yeah, what's your rule on when it's too late to wish your friends and loved ones a Happy New Year? You would know these things.
First time you see them, you could say it. So I'm going to wish a lot of people in April Happy New Year.
So yes, it's the first time, no matter when it is.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Ignore the calendar. That's good to know, because I've never been comfortable with that. Hey, we have a fantastic edition of Starkville today. Bruce Bochy, manager of that Rangers team that won the World Series, will join us. But before we get to Boch, we have some cool bit of news. Just a few minutes before we started recording this, I got mixed up in an incredible announcement. Doug, I have been elected to the National Sportscasters and Sports Writers Hall of Fame by the National Sports Media Association. And it's amazing, right? When the ballot came out, I actually told my family I'd probably finish last, and I won. So
incredible, man.
All right.
Oh, it's incredible. And look, you know, we I know you shower me with all my job descriptions, but we're going to have like Hall of Fame titles here to go with it. It's incredible. Well-deserved. And, you know, especially you straddled those worlds so well, right? Sports casting, sports writing, as well as anyone. And I think that's got to, you know, give you those extra points, right, to get out of the basement. So clearly they recognize that, and you're still doing it. So adapted to modern technology, old school sensibility, total package, man.
I appreciate it, man. I'm just going to read you a few of the names of some of the other sports writers in this Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Red Smith, ooh, Damon Runyon, Dan Jenkins, Roger Angel, Grantland, Rice, our good friend Peter Gammons, and so many more. I can tell you, Doug, it just gives me goosebumps to say those names. And now somehow I'm one of those names. It's just surreal, honestly. I'll be honored on July 1st. There's a whole weekend. The big NSMA Awards event in North Carolina goes on for 3 days. I'm going in, just so you know, with the late, great Roger Kahn, the author of Boys of Summer, and three amazing broadcasters, Joe Buck, Tim McCarver, and Andrea Kramer. So I don't know. How cool is that? It's just too cool.
Yeah, well, just think back to I first read your column when I was in college in Philadelphia. Wow. And right away, clicked. It was different. It was fun. It was funny. And ever since then, so we go back 30 plus years, man. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. And fun and funny is, I've ridden that whole ticket. as far as I can write it. Hey, out of curiosity, how many halls of fame are you in? I'm thinking, like, with all your different jobs and claims to fame, player, broadcaster, teacher, dad, you could be in double figures.
Yeah, I'm in a few. I am in a few. Yeah. University of Pennsylvania, I think the sports, wow. Maybe it's the baseball one. I don't know. Somewhere it's one of those. I think I'm in a New Jersey sports as well, because I remember going, I want to say Bill Parcells was honored that year. So it was a while ago. And so there's a couple, you know, Teaneck, my hometown, you know, Teaneck High School Hall of Fame. So I have a few, but, you know, I don't know. I'm about to, now you made me think about it. Now I look this stuff up. So
So I think I might actually be in more Halls of Fame than you. That's crazy to me.
Probably.
But I predict
yours are just a little bit bigger than mine, actually.
I've had a couple of big ones.
Teaneck, National Baseball, you know.
you're gonna pass me at some point. I know you will. But at any rate, had to share that news with you and with everybody in Starkville. You've been stuck listening to me now for how many years we've done this? This is year four, year five of this podcast.
Year five. Yeah.
So we're headed for the Hall of Fame, my friend. all right, Doug, what do you say we welcome in our special guest in Starkville this week? It is the one, the only, the legendary manager of those Texas Rangers, Bruce Bochy. Boch, welcome back to Starkville.
Well, Jason, it's good to be here, be back with you. Thanks for having me on.
So excited you could do this. This is actually my first chance to congratulate you in person for winning that World Series, since I had such good timing that I picked that week to get sick and missed the whole World Series. So congratulations, man. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
You know, I know you've done this before, but I'm curious, how would you describe what made this one different than those World Series that you won in all those even years in San Francisco?
Yeah, I mean, they're all different in their own ways, you know, just like your kids, I guess, and all special in their own way. But this one did remind me a little bit of the first one, San Francisco, and the fact that in 2010, that was the first time that there was a championship in San Francisco with the Giants. They had won many, but that was in New York. So to see how many people it impacted and how excited everybody was, I mean, that blew me away. I mean, winning the World Series, I mean that's obvious, it's gonna impact you, but just to see how many people that you saw get impacted, and it was very similar with the Rangers. I mean when we had that parade, it just blows you away, and this was the first for them in Texas. So that's why I say they're a little similar. You know, teams are different. How we did it was a little bit different. But that first time, there's nothing like it, I think, for, you know, ownership, fans, everybody. And so, you know, be part of that's what made it so special.
Yeah, it's amazing. I actually want to circle back to that in a little while. But I also want to ask you a question that I asked Dusty Baker a few months after he won. Who would you say was the coolest, most famous person that you heard from after that World Series? I mean, Dusty was dropping the names of presidents, Grammy winners, half the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I can't wait to hear who was reaching out to you.
Yeah, no, I didn't have any presidents give me a call or anything, but you know, it's amazing the number of texts that I got, or even calls, you know, and I do have some friends who are musicians, Brooks and Don. One I'll mention that I thought was the funniest is right after we won, Huey Lewis texts and said, "Hey, what you been up to?" That's his sense of humor. But, you know, so your phone just keeps going off, and, so a lot of special friends, I guess, that were close to me. Not so, you know, I didn't have so many celebrities, although people in baseball, other sports, you know, Steve Kerr, other, you know, head coaches, things like that. So that's, you know, and you appreciate it. That's very humbling because they just keep going. And I don't know, I had 700 or 800, and, you know, it just takes a while to get back, but I try to get back to everybody. So if somebody's out there and happened to be listening, I didn't, man, I apologize because you get a little lost on where you're at, but that's the fun part about it.
Well, Boach, you know, the thing that's so fascinating is, you know, you are retired, right? I mean, you're kicking back in Nashville, you're doing your thing. I'm wondering when you started to connect the dots, all right, getting the opportunity and deciding that this would be the right fit. And then coming in an environment where you've been off for a little while and the rules are different, right? Rules are changed. Can you tell us about like what you brought to what is really constant about baseball that didn't matter, the timing, the environment, the rules, the steadiness that you kind of found that was universally true to allow you to be this successful in this season?
Yeah. And you know, to your point, that's, you know, a pretty big adjustment for someone who's been out for a while, getting caught up with everything, the analytics and everything. But the one constant, the one, you know, some variables that, you know, have to be there in our game that are never going to change, Doug. And I talked about them that spring, or the fundamentals, the fundamentals of the game, you know, doing your job, doing what's right out there, of course, executing, you know, the little things in our game, you know, whether you're on, you know, defense, offense, doing little things to help your team win. And the other one that's big to me is just playing as one, you know, playing together, you know, creating that environment that hopefully brings out the best in these guys and get them to play for the right reason. And so that's always got to be there. I mean, you can have all the information and all the tools and the new drills and all that, but you know, certain things have to be there, and they're important to me. And that's what we talked about in the spring. And I can't say enough, you know, before we went on, you and I were talking about it, but you know, just being an unselfish group and doing what's best for the club, setting aside your own agenda. And we had guys that do that, that did that, you know, just to give you an example, you know, you look at, you know, Martin Perez, who was a starter. He went to the pen, Haney, Scherzer was wanting to pitch in the pen. All these guys were wanting to do whatever, you know, it took, you know, to win. They didn't care how we did it. They just cared that we did it. And so to me, that always has to be there for good teams, for championship teams. And that's never going to change.
You know, Boach, I know you're aware that when you won that World Series, you did some cool and historic stuff. I'm guessing you also know I keep track of that stuff. So let me run three cool things by you. I'd just love to get your reaction. The first, you alluded to this. It wasn't enough for you to end one half-century title drought in San Francisco. Now you've ended another one in Texas. It was 52 years, zero parades till you showed up. 1 year with Bruce Bochy in charge, one parade. And here's the best part, I think. You know how many managers in history have ended two title drafts of 50 years or more? There's only one, and that is you. I just wondered if anyone has mentioned that to you before, and what's the meaning personally to you of being that guy who did something like that?
Yeah, no one's mentioned that. That's the first time I heard it is right now. So I didn't think about it, to be honest. Now, I know there's some guys that have won, you know, championships with, you know, different teams, different leagues. But no, I didn't know about the drought thing, to be honest. I'm not going to lie, it's pretty cool. I'm lucky. I know how blessed I am, because you got to have the resources and the people to do it and to be part of that first one. There's nothing like it. And, you know, it's a gift that keeps on giving, I say. And, you know, I'm still getting, you know, messages, texts, letters, and that will continue from my experience from spring, you know, as we go in spring training and even the start of the season, but we're going to have to get ready. But no, it does mean a lot. And that's, you know, something that we talked about, you know, as a group, but you know, the one thing we wanted to do is bring the pride back to the fans, bring the pride back to ownership, to, you know, to ourselves. And I can't say enough about what these guys did. You know, it's playing for a reason, for a cause. And these guys did that. And so that's what makes it so special when, you know, something like this happens. But no, that's pretty cool. I first time I've heard of it, Jason.
Well, I'm glad to be the one to pass that along, but I'm not done. I know you've also heard you're only the sixth manager to win four World Series or more. But, you know, there's a major difference between you and the other five who did it. Three of them started managing baseball games more than 85 years ago. You're the only one who has managed every postseason game of his life at a time when the postseason consisted of at least three rounds. Have you ever thought about how much less gray hair you'd have if you could have gone right from the season to the World Series without having to deal with that wild card series and the division series?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I've mentioned that a few times. Your life would be easier if you didn't have to, you know, go through the steps that you have to, especially when you're a wild card. You know, I look back at our times as a wild card. Baumgartner, I mean, he was unbelievable. But, you know, for us to – and then it went, you know, this year it was, you know, best out of three. So you had a little room for error. So, you know, that's – you know, that takes a little – I can't say much pressure off, but maybe a touch because it does give you, you know, that added margin of error. But, you know, it's it is more difficult. No getting around it. And you look at the teams we had to go through, and that's why these guys amazed me what they did. I mean, we had to go through Tampa, Baltimore, and Houston, and that's a long, tough road. But, you know, that's what made it even that much better, that much more special.
Yeah. All right, one more thing. You know what else you did last fall, right? You finally won a World Series in an odd year. Before last year, you won three World Series all in even years. But here's the part that was crazy to me. In the even years, your teams in the postseason went 44-13. But in the odd years, somehow in your entire life, you had never won a postseason game until last year. So, oh my gosh. I know you're a great mathematical mind. How do you explain that?
Gosh, I wish I had a way to explain that. Oh, man, I'm glad you didn't tell me that before the game started.
You're welcome. Geez.
But I know I look back at, you know, when I was with San Diego, I know St. Louis, they gave us a hard time. And then, of course, in San Francisco, we did get there on even year, but we got knocked out. But I didn't know that, man. Who comes up with this? That's pretty good. Yeah,
that's my crazy mind at work. I'm sorry.
But you know what? With all that said, I hope we get back to winning in even years. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, all the years are good, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
They're all good. They're all good.
So, Voach, I mean, I know at one point we talked about just sort of your managerial journey. And I guess it's like, When you first started managing, was it like automatic that you were like, okay, we're going to win this? Like, sort of when did that belief in like your skills and the people around you gel to say like, wait a minute, anything is possible. And this is something that I feel like I'm connected to, I'm natural at. And, I guess when did you kind of have that feeling?
Well, as far as managing, I'll say this, Doug. I mean, it's always hard to say, well, we're going to win the championship. But my first year managing was in the Northwest League. And I just felt so comfortable. I said, man, this is what I think I should be doing. Now, I didn't know I would manage in the major leagues. I had that on such a pedestal. I didn't see that coming. You know, Dick Williams and those guys, Sparky Anderson and La Russa. You know, I had some success in the minor league. So, you know, that breeds confidence. And, You know, we had won three championships down there. And so, you know, you start feeling like, you know, you have a way of hopefully helping the guys win and making a difference. But you get humbled in our game, too. And, you know, I had one of my rough, toughest years in the minor leagues after winning 3 years. And so that's, you know, that's a humbling aspect of it. But if I'm going to get specific this year, you know, I felt good about this team when I went in, and we mentioned it earlier about it being a right fit. You look at the, you know, Simeons and Seegers and Lowe's and Youngs and Garcias, and, you know, we need some pitching. And CY said, we're going to go out and get pitching. And Ray Davis, owner, came to the house and said, we're going to go out and get pitching. Well, I felt like we had a team that could make some noise if we did that. And they went out and they did spend some money. And fortunately, we lost to Grom, which, you know, a lot of the pundits said, well, you know, if they get there, they lost their chance of winning the World Series because that's the guy that's going to carry you there. And but I looked at the rest of the staff and I said, you know what? This team in spring training just had a presence about them. They had it all, and the confidence that you love. And, you know, that comes from, you know, guys who have been there, you know, like the Seegers and the Evaldis and those guys. And so I felt really good about this team getting to the postseason. I did. Now, you know, for someone to say, hey, we're going to win a World Series, you know, once you get there, you know, it can be a bit of a crapshoot. No getting around it. But what I did love about this club was how resilient, man. They were tough. They bounced back. We got hit a lot. We took some blows there, but they kept getting up, you know, losing to Grom, Evaldi, Seager early. You know, but they just focused forward and kept going. I said, man, there's something special. And, of course, where your season ended, the naysayers were out there again, and we had to go in Tampa and win. But once they did that, I said, this is a special group. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I will say it's a special group, and they find a way, and sure enough, they did.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, in that same vein, you had such a comfort level with those guys that you managed in San Francisco. How would you describe what it was like, not so much to manage this group in Texas, but to connect with the group? Was it challenging, or was it almost invigorating, you know, to have to start over and learn what makes so many new players tick?
You know what? I think both. You look at it. I mean, I've been out for 3 years. I'm older. I mean, they dropped grandpa on me a few times, trust me. And, you know, but you want to be able to connect. And I give players their space. I give them the clubhouse, but, you know, I think they know I'm accessible, I'm available, and, you know, we talk about that. I want them to come in, and, you know, when they come in, but I want them to be ready to be part of the solution, whatever the question is. And, And so I think there's just a mutual respect, you know, with my time in the game and with their time in the game. So that made it easy, that transition to getting back in the game. For me, invigorating. When I landed in Arizona and get ready to go, you know, this surprise, I was so excited. And, you know, to get in that clubhouse, and then when that first game started, to be in that dugout, I said, man, I miss this. And I just felt like I'm where I should be. And you never know when it's going to hit you and it's time to, you know, hit the pause button or step back again. But I will say this year, you take 3 years off, Jason, I'm going to tell you what, you get such a deeper appreciation of what it was or what you have in the game of baseball and how blessed we are to be doing what we're doing here. And so that, you know, that hit me more this year than ever.
I bet. Do you ever play the what if game? I know it's weird to live in the what if universe, but you easily could have stayed retired and just kept enjoying living that life. So the what if is, what if you had told Chris Young, hey, I'm happy, I don't really want to come back? You think about that?
I have a couple of times, to be honest. And probably the reason I do is because right before I took the job, my wife kept saying, what is it about your life you don't like? You get up when you want, you fish, you golf, you know, you sit in your recliner, you can watch Gunsmoke and things like that. I said, man, I just miss it. And then afterward with us talking, I said, you know, if I wouldn't have done this, I wonder how much I would have regretted not coming back, you know, if they would, you know, won the World Series. And but even if they didn't win the World Series, it was the group. It was the front office, the connections CY and I had, and his staff, ownership, the players, and the staff. I didn't bring on anybody. I kept the staff. We brought in a couple guys, Will Venable, who I'd known a little bit, but, you know, we just connected so well. And so, you know, I would have really missed that. In our clubhouse, I mean, you've seen our clubhouse, guys. And, you know, I still remember Greg Maddux walking in, you know, Mike's brother. He comes in and he says, well, no wonder you're retired. You don't have this at home. You can't get, you know, get this treatment that you're getting here, the food and everything. So, no, to experience what I did, I mean, I wouldn't have known it if I wouldn't have done this, but I will say I would have regretted it, I think. And, you know, when you're in that place where you're not sure, you know, but you really want to get back, you need to scratch that itch, I think. If not, then, you know, you're getting older and, you know, that window's not going to be there. In fact, I didn't know if that window would be there after taking 3 years off. But, you know, there it was. It was, you know, it was there. I was lucky in the fit that it was. Again, just totally blessed.
Well, Boach, was there a moment where you know, you came back, you're getting to know your team, and then you were like, wow, this is really different from when I last managed? Like, was it, you know, analytics, technology? Was there anything that just sort of like, whoa, what are these guys doing?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Well, it's not totally different because we use analytics, and that's, I'm just using that because that's the biggest difference in the game now. You know, we use it in San Francisco, but there's so much more information. I don't know what a lot of this stuff is. I'm being honest. You know, you throwing out equations or whatever. You know, I have a tremendous liaison, and Bobby Bandolo, who kind of transferred the information to me and Mike, and he's awesome. He's so good, and you know, he understands you know, our side just like we understand his side. So there's a good blend, and we work very well together. But I mean, it can be overwhelming when you go into a meeting sometimes, and some of these guys are talking, and you know, you're looking, going, I've been doing this 25 years. I'm not sure what he just said, but you know, but they get that and they laugh, and I tell them, yeah, I have fun with it. And I said, you got to put this in a little different terms for me, but all the good humor, though. But there's, and that's the key, you know. It's, I work with anybody as long as we're working together, and that's you know, that's the great thing about the staff that we have.
Well, Boats, is there like a data point that you kind of saw and was like, wait, this is actually really interesting? Like, has any metric come up that you have appreciation for that you kind of had an instinct for before, but now you actually have the numbers?
Yeah, you know, I'd say probably as much as anything. When you're looking at pitching, how you're attacking the hitters, you know, the shape of the breaking balls, the different breaking balls that you throw hitters. I mean, you're always going to know their hot zone and when, you know, where you want to stay away from and everything. But the detail that goes into this, you know, that they're hitting 080 off of this pitch or this pitch. And we just didn't quite have that information at times. Although in San Francisco, I will say we could get that, but really, I think across the board, you're looking at the leads, things like that. Now they got it so measured on, you know, how far to get off, how far you should get off, stat cast, things like that, to help you actually teach it and help make these players better. So there's quite a few that, you know, I feel like I've always used the analytics even before it was talked about back in 95, the first year I had a job. But I was doing the coloring and the charting and all that. But it just, you got a lot of smart people in the world, and they're all going to add something. And so we have those guys too, and they bring things to light for me, which I'm grateful, because I want to learn. I want to get better, but, you know, I'm not smart enough to get all this in my head, trust me.
Hey, let's talk a little about the 2024 Rangers. Your offseason for your team has been interesting. Jordan Montgomery was your co-ace in October, along with Evaldi. He's a free agent. Martin Perez was a free agent. He's gone. He traded for Max Scherzer. He's out for probably, half the season after the back surgery. How much starting pitching are you going to need between now and opening day?
Well, I think it's fair to say to see why that's kind of what that's what we're looking at. I mean, we do have a rotation, you know, if you look at our guys, I mean, Bradford would be in the rotation, obviously, right now. And, you know, you got Heaney, Gray, and Evaldi, and who am I leaving out there, Senior Mullen. But we have five. Dunning. Yeah, Dunning. Sorry. But, yeah, so we do have a rotation. And, you know, obviously we like some depth there too, and you never know what's going to happen. We saw what happened last year, and that's where a guy like Dane Dunning, who started in our bullpen, ended up going in a rotation. We brought up Bradford, so you know those we'll need some guys within that we can call on and help us out. But I think it's fair to say, you know, if there's something out there that we can get done, see why he's going to do it. But pitching, you can't get enough of. And, you know, same with the bullpen. You know, we're still looking out there at bullpen pieces. We lost a couple important pieces. Will Smith, for example, went to Kansas City, played a major role, you know, especially when we had issues in our setup and closing situation and start the season. He helped stabilize that. Chapman's not with us. Stratton, he left. So these are holes to fill. And they're experienced guys, so no, we're very much aware of it, and we'll get this piece together. One thing I will say is our ownership has shown that they will go out and give us resources. That's been proven. You looked at what happened last year, so you know I'm certainly confident that something out there can get done. We'll get it done.
Okay, I know you're going to get Max back. And Jacob DeGrom back at some point this year, if all goes well. What are the chances you could also add a left-handed starter who's won a bunch of Cy Youngs in L.A.? You know, just in case a guy like that, say, had interest in pitching someplace like Texas?
Yeah, yeah, that's the question. Obviously better for CY, for Chris Young. But, yeah, he's out there. Of course, being in that division, I saw enough of Clayton. But, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I haven't had any conversations with him. I can tell you that. But, yeah, I'm curious what's going to happen there, obviously, with him. And I don't mean with us, but just what he's going to do. So I can't talk on that. But, we do have some help coming, as you said. We've got Tyler Mahle, too, and he's a big arm, nice arm that, at that deadline, it's like we're making – two or three trades there when these guys, hopefully knock on wood, no setbacks if they're ready to go.
Oh, but do you already have like your kind of spring training speech, like, you know, kind of in your mind? Like, I mean, what do you say to this team? Like in all these years when you won the World Series and went back the next year, is there a theme that you try to draw on?
I think a lot of managers will tell you, I know with me, something that hit me, it could be watching a movie, something may hit me or a thought, and you wake up at night sometimes and, something hits you. But, I think a big part is how we can improve. That's your, our game. That's what you got to do. If not, you're going to get passed by. So, what worked well for us, where we can improve. And of course, you got to have the same attitude you had the year before. Last thing we need to do is get complacent. And it's a good group. I'm not worried about that. But to your point, yeah, they're still going through my head. It was a rainy day today, and I was just thinking of some things. I got my grandson here, so he's a pretty big distraction. But yeah, it's actually fine. And we'll get closer to spring training, then you kind of get it all in your head before you leave.
Can we do some quick hits? I'll just say the name of a player on your team. Just give me a few words to describe what you think of when you think of that player. Okay, start with Adolis Garcia. Mm-hmm.
Passionate, plays with a lot of emotion. And it's just a fun guy, entertaining player to watch.
Marcus Semien.
Serious discipline, leads by example with his work ethic.
Nathan Eovaldi.
Big game player, pitcher. Just has that maniacal focus you love on the mound.
Love maniacal focus. Speaking of which, Max Scherzer.
Max, entertaining. I'll start with Max. Entertaining, but highly competitive. All about winning. And which they all are. But you see why he's pitched so long when you get a chance to know him.
Corey Seager,
very, again, serious, but all about winning too. Corey, very disciplined with his routine, doesn't waver from it, spends hours preparing for a game, as prepared as any player I've had.
All right, one more. Evan Carter.
Evan Carter, got a thing from Evan. Youthful enthusiasm that really did a lot for our club. A talented kid that can play anywhere, will play anywhere, will do anything asked. He's got a nice future.
You were good at this game. I said a few words. You know how to answer it if you were. Well done.
Yeah, well, it's easier when you go longer. I tell you, my first interview, it's funny you say that. I still remember talking to Larry Lucchino and John Moores. They come in to meet me. And Larry Lucchino, this is kind of my interview. Randy Smith was the general manager then. He goes, give me a one-word description of every player of your team. One word. Now, how many times can you say competitive? The more you can talk about them, the easier. But,
Can I give one more?
Yeah.
Well, but I'm interested in Travis Jankowski because I called the game when LSU lost to Stony Brook when he was playing there. I had a lot of players drafted off that team. They're really talented. And he was the leadoff guy. Good speed, incredible defense. And it's kind of like been able to bridge, kind of the fourth outfielder defensive speed guy and turned it into, a champion. Can you talk about Travis and just his journey and what he meant to the team?
Boy, I mean, what a great story. He comes in spring training and, I got to see a lot of him with San Diego when I was with the Giants and he had a horrible spring. I mean, it couldn't have gone worse. And, I've been there where you're trying to make the team, you're trying to make an impression, and he just felt too much pressure, I think, which he can handle, but that's a lot of pressure. And I finally said, hey, I know you're a better player than this. Don't worry about it. And so at the end, we didn't have a spot on our club, and Tavares goes down. And so all of a sudden we do have, I mean, he was out there. He could have gone anywhere, but he decided to stay there right at the end of spring training. And sure enough, we activated him. And but you can't have a more valuable player on your team that's not a starter. This guy, he can play defense. He's a great base runner, bunter, gives you good at bats. And what a great teammate. And I just love the guy. And he saved us more than once because, we had injuries in that outfield, including Garcia going down. It's really cool to see somebody like that get rewarded and have the year that he had because he came in as a non-roster. It looked like he was getting cut. And next thing you know, he's on our club and stays the whole year and has a tremendous year and gets a World Series ring.
All right, one more for me, Boach. December, January, your Hall of Fame time. We've already had Jim Leland get elected. We've got the writer's vote will be announced here in a couple weeks. And it all makes me think about you. You've won 4 World Series. You're the lockiest lock ever to make it when you finally appear on one of these ballots. Have you thought about the Hall of Fame, what it would be like to see your plaque alongside those other plaques in Cooperstown? Does that ever cross your mind?
I'll be honest. No, I'm not just saying it. I'm not doing the humble thing, but I haven't. It's hard for me to even grasp that. It just wrap that around my head because it's such a sacred place. And granted, it's we're talking about managers, but I was so happy for Jimmy. And but no, I haven't, because I even had somebody ask more than one say, well, now you got back in, you had a chance to go in the Hall. That never crossed my mind. So I think that should help answer the question that no, it's not something I think about.
That's true. You could have sat out managing and we'd be shaking your hand right now.
So yeah.
I think it does answer the question. Boach, it is always such a pleasure to speak with you. You're the best, man. Congratulations on all of this. And we look forward to seeing you at a ballpark and in Starkville again real soon.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, great talking with you guys. And let's all have a great year. I'll see you at the park.
Awesome.
Yeah, Boach. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Boach.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners, in this show. Doug, we actually have not done one of these trivia segments since November, right? So we're still coming off our greatest trivia season in recorded Starkville history. And as we all know, there's no greater history than Starkville history. We got at least one trivia question right in every calendar month in 2023, in which we actually tackled a question. So I'm curious, Doug, what's your prediction for 2024? Are we just going to take off from here, like maybe Julio Rodriguez, or have we peaked? And do we now start doing our descent into a decline where we eventually get no questions right for the rest of our lives?
Well, I want to figure out if we're like an odd year or even year team, a la the Bruce Bochy effect. Yeah. I don't know. So I want to find out. But I'm going to start off. I think we might get five questions right in a month. That's my goal. Have we done that? Just in case there's like an extra Monday or Tuesday. If we could do that, I feel like that might happen.
Okay, that's where we're going to draw the bar. I'll take the under on that bar, but anything's possible. It's a new year. We're writing a whole new story, and we're going to go with all of the unbridled optimism inside our souls. And on that note, we're about to take on a trivia category, Glanville, never before tackled on this show.
Wow.
Not just trivia, my friend, but raised trivia. So let's welcome in this week's special trivia guest star. It's Kyle Spiker from beautiful Tampa Bay. Kyle, welcome to Starkville.
Thank you, guys. How's it going?
Great. You know, Kyle, the one thing I can see from your X feed is that you're a gigantic Tampa Bay sports fan. So this is your chance to tell all of Starkville a little about yourself, aside from the part where you single-handedly negotiated that deal for the Rays' new ballpark.
Oh, yeah. It was a pleasure for me to get it done. Still waiting to cut some final, clear some hurdles here at the end. I'm a former Buccaneers season ticket holder, been to dozens and dozens of Rays games, including back in the inaugural season. I was at a game where a foul ball broke a light on the catwalk. So, you know, primo stuff there. Lightning as well. And really excited to be part of the show today.
Thank you. We're excited to have you. I love the catwalk, by the way. You know that.
That makes two of us.
Yeah. Also, I'll be roaming around your part of the world in just a few weeks in spring training. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll see you somewhere in my spring training travels. But now, enough of that chit-chat, Kyle. Mm-hmm. It's time for you to hit us with the first Rays trivia question we have ever had to answer on this show.
Okay. So you guys going to put your thinking caps on in a moment?
It took too long.
Cap on here.
There you go.
There we go.
Oh, it's retro.
Yeah, I love it. Nice. All right. So the phrasing is important here. In the illustrious history of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays / Rays, there have only been three hitters who the Rays have drafted and developed who have made an all-star team with the Rays. So again, the important part there, drafted by the Rays,
drafted,
made an all-star team with the Rays.
Right. Okay.
So nobody who they drafted and took off, or no free agents, drafted and developed.
Okay. They could have left and come back. I mean, all that's all fair game.
Sure.
Okay. You know, I've spent so much time around the Rays through the years. When I first saw this question, I thought, this will be easy. But really? Then I started thinking about it, and I realized it's harder than I thought. I think there are two reasons. One is there's so many guys who we think of as Rays who were not drafted by the Rays. They came over in trades, you know, that Willie Adames, Randy Arozarena, all those guys, before they were even in the big leagues, the Rays traded for them. So that's one thing. The second thing is, I think of former Rays, and it feels like I think about pitchers, David Price, James Shields. I know Chris Archer and Tyler Glasnow came over in trades, but it feels like I've spent so much time talking to Rays pitchers and not enough time talking to Rays hitters. So trying to come up with three hitters that the Rays drafted and then went on to become All-Stars was a fun challenge. So here's what I've got, Doug. One, obviously, Evan Longoria, right? Greatest hitter the Rays ever drafted and developed. Kyle, you think it's safe to say he's the greatest hitter the Rays ever drafted and developed?
He's on the Mount Rushmore of Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, it is. Can you imagine a Mount Rushmore right, hanging right by the beach in Clearwater?
Maybe a water park or something.
Just a sand sculpture. Okay, so Evan Longoria, I think, has to be one. I think the second feels like it should be Carl Crawford. You know, he stole all those bases, you know, all the doubles and the triples and all that stuff. Yeah, there's big seasons for that team. Great. So it feels like two of these guys should be Longoria and Crawford. And then who is the third? And the most tempting answer to me was B.J. Upton. I'm actually not sure if he ever made an all-star team, though, as a Ray. You know, all three of those guys were teammates. Would three Rays have made an all-star team? I'm not so sure of that. So let's all hold him there. Two hitters the Rays took with the first pick in the country in the draft, but they also had strange journeys. Josh Houghton was one. He never did anything for the Rays. Delmon Young, another, caused a lot of issues. I got in the middle of one of those once. He got traded away pretty quickly. I just don't think they're the answer. And the other problem is they had some really bad teams in those early years of the franchise. And you know how it works. Like, there's got to be an all-star from every team. They're the kind of teams where one Ray has to get picked. So they pick somebody to be the extra catcher or the third shortstop or whatever. But who is that? Jason Bartlett? I don't know. I'm stuck. So beyond those names I've thrown out there, I'm kind of stumped. Who's on your list?
Yeah, I mean, well, the two right away, that's the first two I thought of, Crawford and Longoria, even though I'm like, well, was Crawford drafted by, the Expos or something? I was thinking, is it more recent? You know, like there's sometimes that sneaks up on you, right? The guys, Kevin Kiermaier, for example, is he?
I thought about him. I don't think.
Did he make an all-star team? I don't think he's I know. Maybe it's all the Gold Glove.
Probably should have.
And guys like, well, there's always the Lau effect, right? Lau.
Brandon Lau's a good one.
I thought Lau would be a good
Brandon
one.
Brandon Lau's a really good one, man. He's a better guest than B.J. Upton, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm just trying to think. So he wasn't drafted by the Rays. Ben Zobrist, right? He was a Royal or whatever. Who was he drafted by? Yeah.
Right. No, I don't think. No, I'm confused now, but you're right. He was not an original Ray, was he? No, wait. He got traded by the Rays.
The Royals was. Royals. That was after. That was after, right?
Went to the Royals after the Rays. Maybe he was drafted by the Rays. Okay. It's so hard. Isn't it hard to know? I can't remember. That's another great guess, though.
Cubs, Rays,
He won Rays, Royals, Cubs.
Rays, Royals, Cubs, right.
He won the World Series for the Royals, then he won the World Series for the Cubs.
Mm, okay. Yeah, my best guesses were Lau and Zobrist.
Okay, so, I know we're just throwing darts, but...
Yeah, those are good darts, though.
All right, so we'll go with Longoria and Crawford. I'll let you figure out...
And we didn't negotiate. We're not going to... I don't want to negotiate in January. I want to save it for the season.
Yeah, there's no... It's three answers. It's not over.
Three answers.
So, yeah, we're not doing two out of three on this one.
Yeah.
Good, three good out of four.
So you have to pick the third. That would be among Brandon Lau, Ben Zobrist, B.J. Upton. So on you, Glanville.
Well, I feel very confident in Zobrist as an all-star, so it feels good.
All right, let's do that.
Want
to do that?
Let's
do that.
What year?
He was like, he was the king of the wins above replacement leaderboard. That's a good
guess. Yeah. All right, that's a good guess. That's a good guess.
So, Kyle, any chance that it's Evan Longoria, Carl Crawford, Ben Zobrist?
Sorry, guys. Two out of three.
Oh, so close.
All right. So, first two, obvious, as you had said. Evan Longoria, drafted in 2006, made the All-Star team in his rookie year in 08, all the way through 2011, four times. Carl Crawford, drafted by the Rays in 1999, turning down offers from the Nebraska Cornhuskers, play quarterback, et cetera. Made the All-Star team in 04, 07, 09, and 2010, including an All-Star MVP, I believe in 07, when he hit a homer and he made that home run saving catch in St. Louis. The third one, you mentioned him, from the 2015 draft, Brandon Lau, one-time All-Star, 2019.
One time snuck in there. That's
way to talk us out of the right answer there, Glanville. We did it again.
So who was drafted by?
Zobrist. I've got him up here, drafted by Houston in 04. Right. Traded. Yeah. He was part of the Aubrey Huff trade.
Houston. Wow. We never got
there. There's many others, many pitchers who've had success. Yeah. Christ, James Shields. Chris Archer was. One of them also, and then guys like Austin Meadows was a trade target. Matt Joyce, Jason Bartlett, who you had mentioned.
BJ Upton was, what was his story?
Zero time All Star.
Zero time All Stars.
Doug,
I hate that we're 0-1 this year. I actually don't feel too awful about this. We've gone where
we had the right guess. We had the right guesses. That's why we do the extra. Operation multiple choice, we'd be good shape.
I know. You're going to have to manipulate that Glanville line just a little bit, right? So, at any rate, we haven't even gotten to the best part of this segment, because that's the part that doesn't involve us. So, for the first time in 2024, why don't we bring in the beloved mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another fabulous play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. So, Tim, we're going to have some great Rays moment in time. I can't wait to see what you got.
We are going back to, and Kyle mentioned it, actually 2007, Carl Crawford homer. 2009, he was the MVP of the All-Star game in St. Louis. Yeah. Biggest play of the game, actually defensive, which is pretty cool. So we're going to go with that one.
Hop goes after the first pitch. Launches one to deep left field at the wall. Crawford one out. What a catch by Carl Crawford to start the seventh.
If Carl does not make this leap, it would have been a home run. So a home run saving catch by Carl Crawford, acknowledged by Papelbon.
Wow. So good. And like doubly meaningful to me to hear that clip. Kyle, I don't know if you heard this news, but it was announced today. I got elected to the National Sports Casters and Sports Writers Hall of Fame. And two of the guys I'm going in with are Joe Buck and Tim McCarver. And we just call that moment. So good, right? Kyle, we loved your question, man. Great to talk to you. Go have a grouper sandwich for us. And please come back and visit us again in Starkville, okay?
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Sliding, catching, and going into the dugout.
Doug, last time I checked, it was still the off season. So even though you should know, I actually wrote a weird and wild football column this week, The Athletic, with Jake Seeley from our fantasy group. But this is not going to be the strange but true portion of these festivities.
Yes.
This is where we get to hang out in the dugout. That's where our friend Doug Glanville is gathering anyone who will listen to him. Okay.
Yes.
And so he gets
captive audience.
Yep. We're very captive. And this is where Doug will spin his great stories about his life and his times, theoretically, in baseball. But today, I just feel like I need to warn everybody out there. I'm not sure this qualifies as a story, quote unquote. You know what it's going to qualify as? I'm going to go with the term victory lap. See, a few weeks ago, Major League Baseball announced a bunch of new rules for 2024. One of them appears to have stemmed directly from the ranting and raving of our friend Doug Glanville, his very self. So, Doug, they've redefined the running lane between home and first. I don't know how you got their attention or why they actually listened to you.
Waving, you know.
I'm going to get out of the way. Tell us all about why you've always hated the running lane. I somehow got Major League Baseball to not ignore you?
Yes. Yes, I did. I was the wild man, you know, in the parking lot with protest signs. Yes. And I just continued to, march my way. But yes, I realized I've tried to get perspective. I've realized that I've been kind of ranting against, the warning track. I had a whole column against the warning track. So I was like, all right, I want to make sure I'm, not losing perspective here. So let me back up. But the running lane was very personal. And I think it started by a couple of playing days moments when, one time I bunted against the Reds. And, I used to run, straight line, right? So I was kind of across the field into the dirt to hit first base. And third baseman fields a bunt, throws it across, and I get there right when I think it was Casey playing first, and boom, knocked the ball out or whatever. But I was like, I was almost by him. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, great, bunt base hit, let's start it off. And Joe West was the umpire, and he was like, not so fast, calling you out of the running lane. I was like, from third base, you could. So I had, first of all, I didn't realize, I thought the running lane was catcher throwing the ball behind you, hits you in the back. I didn't realize that literally you could call it on any throw. And so that started a little bit of my animosity towards the running lane, but I didn't want to be just selfish about it. So I started to watch more and more. And I had a couple more plays like that. And yeah, I was unorthodox in how I ran to first, because I usually was out in front, kind of hit a little front leg at time. And then I would be, getting good speed towards first, but I always start on the grass. So I was in the grass before I got to the bag, but shortest distance between two points, I'm just trying to get my base hit. But over time, I had to get a little more educated about it, not just be ranting. And moments started to pop up. And I think one of the bigger moments was Trey Turner. Trey Turner in the World Series got called out on the running lane. And, it just led me to dive in a little deeper. And I had to be a little more objective about it. So understanding that you're the runner, just like on a pop-up in the infield, when the fielder's attention is drawn to fielding that ball, you have the obligation, right, to be the one to get out of the way because you see the play. So I understood that there's a certain responsibility of you as the runner who can see things unfold when the fielder's attention is somewhere else. So I did respect that. But I also felt like with the running lane, first of all, the running lane is in foul territory, right? And the base is in fair. So you already have a problem, especially for a right-handed hitter who's in fair and now has to run foul as if he's hitting a double and then go back into fair to get the base. I mean, that just made no sense at all. And if anything, you just put a second base there, an additional base there. And you see it in softball sometimes, right? So that didn't make sense. And it was not natural for any right-hander to do that. And plus, you are thinking about getting on base the shortest distance between two lines, and you have to give all this up for an imaginary throw that hadn't even happened yet, right? So you know what I'm saying? Like that was bothersome to me. And on top of that, you talked about football. The football analogy is this. In football, you have pass interference. But there's two kinds of interference. There's defensive interference, right? You know, guy goes up, he's about to catch it, you hit him. Okay, that's interference. Just like in running down the line, I could cause interference. However, there's also offensive interference. And what that does is it gives mutual respect and equilibrium and balance to the right to the ball and right to execute the play to both defense and offense. Whereas the running lane, the way it seemed to be constructed was based on, well, guy made a bad throw and it's on you to get out of the way and all these things. There's no onus on the defender to make the good throw. Like, these are major league players, right? So if you make a bad throw up the line, hey, that's on you, dude. Like, that's your throw. So just because now I have to get out of the way and comport myself to do all this stuff just because you made a bad throw. And I just think that that was problematic to me. Like, you know, I understand, like, I give a little bit more wiggle room on the bunt. The catcher has to throw the ball, you know, and you know, they may not have time. But think about a strikeout, call, you know, swinging miss, ball gets by the catcher. The catcher, what do you see the catcher do? He runs and he creates an angle and then he makes the throw because he missed the ball, right? So he has to create the angle. Just like on a double play ball, you know, any other lane, you see fielders trying to, you know, avoid the runner, right? They have to create the angle. So why can't we give that responsibility to shortstop, third baseman, second baseman? And why is it all on me as a runner to get out of the way in on bad throws, right? So I just wanted to put, I'm not saying, like, I understand I see the play and I have more power, but you still put some pressure, like offensive interference, which you don't hear called that often, but it is called, and put that on the defense to make the throw. So what I appreciate is I ranted about it. I wrote about it. I was getting text messages on any running lane. Kyle Tucker went ballistic last year. There's all kind of people, and Kyle Schwarber, a lot of guys have been talking about it, and I kept getting text messages. So I, you know, MLB, you know, in spring training, we go over the rules. I, of course, every year I've brought it up. And one year they declared me the chairman of the running lane. They bestowed that title upon me. And all of a sudden this year I get a text message, MLB, and they're like, okay, I think you're going to get your wish. You know, we could talk about it offline. And so I was like, very curious. I learned about it. And I sent a text back saying, you have given me Christmas, Hanukkah, Diwali, Eid, and Kwanzaa all in one on this. It was over the holidays. So I'm very happy. Maybe it's not perfect, but they've widened the lane to encompass the whole, you know, dirt. And so you can be inside, you could be in fair territory, and that makes more sense. And we'll see, I'll find something wrong with it eventually. But no, I think they're on the right track, and I appreciate that I had some role. I don't think I was everything in all this, but I had some role in pointing people in that direction.
All I can tell you is my conversations with the people at Major League Baseball about this rule, your name came up, and I didn't bring it up. Okay. So you definitely played a role. The other thing is, I'm not sure we actually ever explained what the heck's changing. So I want to make sure we do that. They're going to widen the dirt area along that first baseline by 6 inches. So instead of guys having to zigzag between fair and foul territory, as you just described, Doug, when they're trying to get to first base, they can now, at least in theory, take a more direct route from home to first and not get called out for interference, at least in theory. Doug, does that cover it?
Yes. Yes. And you have some fair territory to run to the base, which makes sense because the base is in fair territory. Umpires will still have certain discretion. And obviously if you stick your elbow out, Lenny Dykstra or whatever, there's going to be certain things, but yeah, I think it's an elegant solution. I think it's, I think it has a lot of potential to just be what it is. And we'll see.
Yeah. All right. I want to step in here to mention that you have been stuck on changing one rule. Meanwhile, I'm the guy who's come up with all sorts of brilliant ideas, or at least written about these brilliant ideas of different rules they could change, tweak. And how many of my ideas actually happen in the big leagues? I think we can agree that answer is none. Correct.
Is it not? You didn't get the double hook. When's the double hook coming?
Okay, so the double hook never made it out of the Atlantic League. The other one that I wrote about that at least showed up on a field somewhere was the pie slice, you know, the pie slice around second base.
Yeah.
So this is how they tweak the shift bands so that the farther you are behind second base, the farther away you have to stand from the bag, just to allow more singles up the middle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one has not made it out of the Florida State League. So I haven't gotten out of the Atlantic League with one, or the Florida State League with the other. Meanwhile, Doug Glanville has one idea. He won't stop talking about it. And what happened? They just give in. Just a little stop calling and writing about it.
You gotta rant. You gotta keep pounding the gavel. You gotta keep, you know, and just be the raging up. You know, I play the long game, man. Long game. And but I appreciate they heard me on this one.
Yeah, I'm not much of a ranter, but I should be. And I'll admit it. I'm happy for you. I'm a fan of this rule. But here's the best news. This is the last time we'll ever have to talk about the running late on Starkville. So me, everybody out there, we can all move on the rest of our lives. Doug Glanville, thank you. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all off season long on The Athletic Baseball Show. And if you'd like to read any of the amazing hot stove baseball coverage, is the stove hot? We'll go with yes on that. If you'd like to read any of the hot stove baseball coverage in The Athletic, we can tell you how. Just go to theathletic.com/baseball show. And if you are a new subscriber, you can subscribe for just $2 a month for the next 12 months. $2 seems kind of affordable, right? Meanwhile, you should also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick the most fun listener trivia question of the week. Then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. So how could you send a question to us? You can always email us at Starkville@theathletic.com. Starkville has an E on the end. Or you can do what most people do. Hit us with your questions at X, the site we used to know as Twitter. Doug, we used to know you as Doug Glanville. So how would people direct a question at you on X?
I was inspired by Twitter, X formerly known as Twitter. So I just go back to my old tried and true Doug Glanville, formerly known as Doug Glanville. And therefore, it's at Doug Glanville. And just put DougGlanville after the at symbol. And that's it. It's home. Mm-hmm.
I am still known as Jason Stark, but you don't have to spell out my whole name. Only Glanville makes you do that. I am at JaySonst. That's Jason with a YST. Also remember, hashtag those questions. Hashtag StarkvilleQS. Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Bruce Bochy for visiting us. Thanks to Kyle Spiker for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McManus, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon.
Starkville.